Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Jay.
All right, Jim. So the Vikings making some moves, adding another quarterback, Desmond Ridder. They also added Cam Akers back to the roster. Tell me about those two adds for the Vikings.
Aaron Jones is headed for IR. It'll probably become official today if it isn't already official. Hamstring, older player, can't mess with it. Cam Akers has been good in this offense. He knows the offense. He played in McVay and O'Connell's offense in L.A. He's kind of the perfect plug-in guy. He can back up Jordan Mason. He makes a lot of sense. And then Desmond Ridder is signed because you don't know how it's going to go with Wentz, and Max Brosmer is probably years away from being ready for even a debut. So pretty logical moves here.
So will Ritter be third-string quarterback?
I would guess – well, I don't know. You know, maybe we'll know by this. Maybe O'Connell will tell us this afternoon. We don't know at the moment. It probably makes sense to bring Ritter in as the backup. He's played in the NFL. He started games in the NFL. Yes, he'll have to cram for the system, but, you know, Josh Dobbs did it. You know, you just can't put Max Brosmer in this situation. It's just silly to even entertain the thought. He just hasn't – he's not ready. He's nowhere close to being ready. And, you know, if you play Desmond Ridder and he has a bad game, well, he's Desmond Ridder. He's just a guy looking for a job. You play Max Brosmer and he can't function at this level, you could crush his spirit. You just can't put a guy in that situation.
Are we going to see a Scott or Akers as the number two behind Jordan Mason?
That's a good question. I would think it would be Scott. He did look good. He had a good camp. He looked good in preseason. He's, you know, he's been here, I would guess. But, you know, we like to think of things in very linear terms. It could be situational. It could be, you know, Scott if you need to run it, Akers if you need to throw it. It could be, you know, Scott in certain sets and Akers in other sets. There are a lot of different ways they can play that.
Do you know any idea about any of the health of their offensive linemen that got dinged up and Darisaw, who we've been waiting to come back this year?
I mean, we're talking here on Wednesday morning. They'll have the first injury report this afternoon, and after we see the first injury report, we still won't know. And they thought they said that they thought Darisaw had a chance to play in week one, and he hasn't played yet. So I don't know what good speculating about injuries is. I just don't. I'm guessing that, you know, my guess, and it's only a guess, is that Darisaw comes back this week and Harrison Smith is closer this week. But it's just a guess.
Is it an illness that Harrison Smith is dealing with?
Yeah, it's a very personal kind of illness / ailment. Something he doesn't want to talk about, something nobody's going to talk about publicly, and that's why it's been kind of a secret. And they keep saying he's improving, but, you know, all anybody really cares about is when does he actually play, and he hasn't played yet.
Jim, the Vikings are going to go up against the Bengals, and they're going to play without Joe Burrow. Jake Browning, when he's filled in, has been pretty productive, although he does turn the ball over, it looks like, more than what Burrow does. What do you think about Browning?
He's kind of like a better version of Nick Mullins. He might throw for 400 yards, but he also might throw four terrible interceptions while throwing for 400 yards. So he's dangerous, and you can get turnovers out of him. This is going to be a fascinating game. I mean, the NFL always finds a way to be fascinating. We have no idea what Carson Wentz is going to do. We have no idea what Browning against, you know, this Flores defense is going to do. We don't know who's going to play. I mean, the Vikings are missing about 9 starters right now. Anything could happen on Sunday. But Browning will gun the ball, and he's got extremely talented receivers. And he was very productive last week when he came in for Burrow. So it's going to be just, you know, it's going to be just a push-pull type of conflict. Can Flores turn him over often enough to keep him from shredding the secondary?
Jim, how do you feel that the defensive linemen, especially the new guys, Hargrave and Allen, have fared so far?
It's funny because I rewatched the Vikings game. Sometimes when you're watching live, you can't just focus on things like offensive line play and defensive line play in any detailed way. So I rewatched the game, and I really thought that so Allen and Hargrave, I thought, were excellent week one. Week two, I thought that the Falcons did a really good job blocking them, and guys like Dallas Turner and the interior linebackers just didn't make plays. I just thought Bijan Robinson, the offensive line, got, they locked up the Vikings' best run stuffers, And then the second level guys did just, Bijan just beat them. He just spun, cut, just made them look silly. So hard to evaluate the interior guys when the other team runs the ball really well. I don't really think it was on Allen and Hargrave as much as it was on the secondary guys.
You know, you brought up Dallas Turner, and he'll make some flash plays, but it also he'll make some plays where he seems like he takes bad angles or gets out of position. What do you think about how he's played?
I watched him specifically when I rewatched the game, and he had one sack. It was basically, I think, I can't remember who it was. Somebody got in there, kind of turned him, and Turner got there in time to finish the play and get the sack. He had one tackle on Bijan, where Bijan was making a spin move and Turner held on to him. Other than that, I saw a guy who made zero plays. He doesn't get off blocks. And a lot of times they were having Kyle Pitts or their other tight end block him one-on-one, and he couldn't get off a block. Now, and to be really good at that position, you got to be able to beat offensive tackles. Offensive tackles handle him very easily, and he's getting blocked by tight ends. That's a terrible sign.
Jim, the Twins were way down yesterday, down 10-1 in the fourth inning, and then they came back with 3 in the fifth, 4 in the sixth. They got within a run with a run in the ninth inning. Got home runs from Trevor Larnach and Ryan Fitzgerald, James Outman. Zebby Matthews got hit hard, 9 earned runs over 3 innings. Thoughts on last night's game?
Yeah, you know, as you search for meaning and meaningless games, the comeback is, you know, nice for fans to see the team, you know, made an effort. But I think all that really mattered was that you need Zebby Matthews to be good, and he was horrific. So I think 13 base runners in 3 innings, 11 hits, 2 walks, a home run. You know, there's a difference between command and control. Control means you don't walk people. Command means you put the ball where you want it to be. And sometimes that's even outside the strike zone. His command is terrible. He just throws hittable pitches after hittable pitches. So maybe they rushed him. Maybe he needed more time. Maybe he's not good enough, but this is a problem. They need all those good starting pitchers they can find, and he's pitching his way out of a job.
Is he a guy that they could transition to bullpen? I think we brought this up before, that some of these starters might have to make that move.
Usually the guy you like transitioning to the bullpen is the guy who doesn't have enough of a pitch mix to get through 5, 6, 7 innings, doesn't have enough pitch variety. That's why Zebby really profiles more as a starter. He's got like 6 pitches, and he's got velocity, but it's not like, you know, 100 miles an hour Duran type velocity. So he really profiles as a starter. If he was going to go to the bullpen, you'd basically be saying, okay, let's just have you throw your 2 or 3 best pitches, get rid of the rest. And I just don't know if they're ready. I just don't know you can do that. I mean, listen, the results are horrible. No excuse. The results are horrible. But I just don't think you want to give up on a young starting pitcher until you're sure he can't do it. And I'm not sure, as bad as it's been, I'm not sure he can't do it in the future.
Jim, some other things going on. The Lynx are going to play game 2 of their series at Golden State tonight. They won decidedly in game 1. Your thoughts, how important would it be to win this series here tonight?
Listen, we in the sports world, especially in our business, in fandom, everybody always wants to make every game sound really important. Honestly, they could lose this, come back home, win handily, and nobody would even remember they lost game 2, you know. But if you want to imbue this game with importance, last night the Aces get beat. Breaks, I think, a 17-game winning streak, one of the longest winning streaks in WNBA history. You know, the Fever actually won a game despite all their injuries. So you're seeing other teams extended in this series. If you're looking for the Lynx to have some kind of advantage going into the next round, you know, finishing this off in 2 games and having a nice long weekend before having to play another game would be a nice advantage for them.
Who would their next round be against if they were able to win tonight?
It depends on who wins. It's a seeding situation, so we don't know yet.
Okay. NFL tomorrow night, you got Dolphins against the Bills. If the Dolphins were to lose tomorrow night, could we? I mean, there's always talk of coaches losing their jobs, but is the Dolphins coach in trouble if they can't beat the Bills or if they can't win a few more games here over the next couple of weeks?
I don't know if you'd fire somebody because they couldn't beat a superior team. The Bills are obviously way light years ahead of the Dolphins. It's more about the way it looks and the way it feels and the way players are reacting and people are talking. The Dolphins look like a soft team. They look like a team that can't run the ball, that can't get the ball to their best receivers, that invested heavily both financially and emotionally in Tua, and he doesn't look good enough. The offense does – Mike McDaniel's offense does create openings and lanes. He is a good offensive coach. He does not right now appear to be a good head coach. So, I don't know if you fire him after 3 weeks and after he loses the Bills, but I think he is on thin ice.
All right, Jim, what do you got in your podcast?
Let's see. We will have the Viking update shows out. Good show with John Krasinski about all this stuff. We have Don Mitchell's show with Emily Liker, Star Tribune Vikings reporter, does a great job for us. That'll be out. That'll probably be out Thursday, actually. That'll probably be out tomorrow. We'll do the John Krasinski show this morning and get that out. We have good Chin Music, Roy and myself talking about Twins issues. Russo on hockey and the Kaprizov stuff is out. Randy Shaver and Kevin Gorgon are doing a really fun fantasy football show, and I would recommend that. They're knowledgeable, but they're also very funny. Randy, we have Mark Rosen Sports Monday with Scott Studwell. Great interview with him. And everything's at TalkNorth.com or on your favorite podcast app.
All right, Jim. Thank you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks, Jim.
It's Jim Suhan, Star Tribune sports columnist, joining us each weekday morning at this time. Follow him on Twitter at SuhanStrib. Check out his latest column at Star Tribune or his podcast at TalkNorth.com. Jim, once again today, is brought to you by the Green Mill in downtown St. Cloud. Next on WJON, World and National News from ABC, followed by local news.